list of trainers who trust Bleeders Shield is endless. Shouldn't you join the team? To learn more, contact Joseph Vellante at 215-501-6880.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions. And offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action in thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details. The Ponds family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts Breeding Program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner, and breeder, and stallion owner, and developer. It's the best-kept secret in racing, till now. Tell all your friends, and to learn more, visit massbreds.com.
Whether you're new to the racing game or just looking to enhance your operation, Hermitage Farm and Goshen can help you. We are conveniently located between Churchill Downs and Keeneland Racecourse and near world-renowned equine hospitals. With spacious paddocks, expert staff, and qualified veterinarians, we offer full-service boarding, breeding, and sales preparation, as well as post-operative care and layup services. Visit us in person or online at hermitagefarm.com.
SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Yeah, you good? Oh, there we go.
Yep.
John Green is with us, and second half on this Monday, where we had to devote most of the first hour to the situation at Tampa, and I've actually gotten some very interesting responses, some email activity that I will include, and some people in networking, in IT, that is going to enhance, I think, everybody's understanding. The whole thing is, for most of us, you know, it's beyond our comprehension. It's not an area that, you know, you need people that understand the technical aspect, because I think, not that it's going to stop people from being disgusted and frustrated with certain elements of the industry. Infrastructure and the fact that we could be in a position like this, but at least if you understand what transpired, it assuages some of the frustration. Certainly, the Greens and DJ Stables and partner Bob
Coach Ran,
as excited as can be, and it seems like on an annual basis, there's at least one big horse that bubbles to the surface. And in this case, it's Hades, and feels like you're just arcing in a perfect trajectory toward Florida Derby and toward Kentucky Derby.
Steve, no question about it. First, thanks for having me on. I greatly appreciate it and always enjoy being here. You know, the thing that's really exciting for me is obviously to have a Kentucky Derby contender. That's first and foremost of the utmost importance for our program. But it's really, really great that Joe Orsino, who I've known for 35 years, if not more, is handling the horse and is really I don't want to say re-energized him, because he's always been very excited about the industry, but there's a pep in his step now. You know, when he wakes up in the morning, he runs over to the barn to see, you know, how the big horse is doing, how Hades is doing. And I'm getting texts from him at 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock in the morning. And you know what? You don't get those texts when you have a maiden 10 claimer. So I know he's excited about it, and it's re-energized for him. And we're just trying to give the horse a little bit of time right now to continue to develop before the Florida Derby.
Well, in terms of what happened last week, we know Joe's thoughts. You know, people were asking him, you know, are you upset that you didn't enter the Fountain of Youth, given the way the field diminished? And he said, not at all. You guys feel, I mean, everybody was on the same page.
Yeah, and that's the important thing, is that because I've known Joe for so long, we work very well together. So we understood that the game plan for this horse is to give him, you know, 7 or 8 weeks between the Holy Bull and his next race, because we're hoping that he's going to have a very serious campaign in the spring and summer of this year. So we'd rather give him a little bit of time, let him develop. He still needs to put on some weight, but he's sharp as can be. You know, I would have liked to have won the Fountain of Youth, or even the Tampa Bay Derby, because the horse that won, you know, we beat in the Holy Bull as well. But it would have left us with too long of a window from, you know, from that, whatever that prep was in the past 2 weeks, all the way to the Kentucky Derby. And we did that once with Helium, and it probably wasn't the best scenario for our horse to do it that way. And every horse is different, but Joe felt very confident that we're going to give him the time now, and then hopefully we'll run in the Florida Derby, maybe the Kentucky Derby, and then, you know, we'll see what you know, plans we have after that. We have stuff on the board, but I'm still superstitious, and I don't want to say those words out loud.
No, you just you take it a race at a time, and all the, you know, all the trite truisms,
yep,
that apply. Talk a little bit about him, about Awesome Slew, about buying him here. He's a Florida bred,
yep,
and $130,000, which at the time I'm going to guess was on the higher end of the Awesome Slew purchases.
No question, it was on the higher end. So much so that, you know, when we gave Joe a number of horses to look at, he kept coming back to this one. He kept coming back to Hades and comparing all the other horses to that Awesome Slew Colt. And you know, we knew we were going to have to step up a little bit for to buy him, because he was such a good athlete. You know, I have a lot of confidence in the O'Farrell family and what goes on at Ocala Stud, and because of that, we were willing to go six figures on an Awesome Slew, and it looks like that's paid off. But it was funny, when we were bidding on the horse, I told Joe we were going to go to around 100 for the horse, which I thought was a good price, good solid price to be able to get him. And we bid 100, somebody bid 110, and Joe said, could you just go one more? So we bid 115, and then somebody immediately bid back, you know, 125. And Joe said to me, if you're willing to go a little bit higher, I will get you a partner. And I said, we don't really like partners. You know, we only have a couple of people that we work with really, really well, and that we're happy. He said, no, it's Bob. And I said, oh, okay, well, if it's him, then that's good. Meanwhile, like, they were going once, going twice, and you know, so you have to be multifaceted.
Exactly.
when you're here. And we bid the last bid and got him for 130, and sure enough, you know, we've been looking smart ever since.
Well, this is a quintessential Ocala Stud. You mentioned the O'Farrells. It just goes to show you that you don't have to pay, you know, high six figures for runners. How did this horse work? What kind of a breeze did he have?
You know, he had a good solid breeze. It wasn't like 9-4 or anything,
right,
like that.
I was discussing this earlier.
Yeah, but Steve, more importantly, you know, he galloped out strongly. And again, I think somebody told me 40 years ago, when we very first started, when you look at a catalog page, you look at every single piece of information from the top to the bottom. And I said, yeah, you look at the pedigree, right? He said, no, even higher. And what's on the top line?
You're the second person.
So
this
important.
Is so funny. You're the second person in 2 days that has used that meaning who's consigned, who the consigner is, who's the developer of this. And you build a certain, you build a roster of people you respect and trust, and go from there.
And because of that, yes, our list is smaller because we're only willing to buy from a certain number of consigners, you know, at yearling sales and at two-year-old sales. And because of that, maybe I miss out on some horses that will go on and run well. And that's a risk I'm willing to take because I know that I can bid with confidence and I can buy with confidence on the people that we've vetted out and have done well. And David O'Farrell and I have worked together on the board here at OBS for a couple of years now. And I've just been really impressed with him as an individual, as a person. He's a smart guy. He gets the big picture. And they do the right things by their horses.
Well, that's all you can ask. How many in the cycle of the spring sales – and, you know, I say this because I end up seeing you at, you know, you and your father at every, almost every, certainly the ones I go, which is Keeneland, Book One, and this. These are the two that I've been going to the last several years. But what is your calendar in terms of March, April, Timonium, June?
Right. Yeah. Over the years, we've kind of developed a different plan. Previously, we were only buying yearlings. Past few years, we felt like there was more value in buying some two-year-olds from the right people. And so we've gone that route. I have phenomenal shortlisters in Kim Valerio, who picked out Hades, and Lauren Carlisle, who recently came on as well. And it's what's great, Steve, is that they give us lists and some of them are different. You know, there's horses on there that Lauren prefers that Kim didn't, and vice versa. So when I get both of their lists, we look at every single horse on those two lists. And we feel like that with both of them here, we have a competitive advantage for March. So in the past, I haven't been here for the March sale, but we've really felt like that we have an opportunity to strike value here at the March sale. And it's not that prices are inexpensive because they sell good horses here, but sometimes there's horses that you can see developing down the road. And that's really one of the advantages of buying at OBS.
Tom Ventura is circling through and we'll talk to Tom in a minute as well. And he can echo those sentiments. I mean, this sale ends up being a 3-day event. I'm going to guess, in fact, Tommy, go ahead and here, I'll give you that.
Wait, I'm not giving up my airtime to Tommy Ventura. Come on.
Yes. There we go. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. John.
Good to see you again.
We're just saying, you know, the start of the 2-year-old season, essentially, and you guys are poised for the biggest March sale ever, Ness? Is that fair?
Yes. The last year's sale, we had 830 horses, ballpark, and we're 850 this year. We got 40 horses from the Lothenbach dispersal, and it pushed us to that number. I think it's a great mix of horses, and we've got horses, you know, that'll fit any budget. I was looking through the stallion roster, and, you know, you got the who's who, but there's 164 stallions represented here. Wow. So there's something for everyone here, certainly.
Well, and the first crop stallions, and I'm sure I'll do some of that work too, a robust roster of, you know, some of the most, I'm going to expect the most eagerly anticipated first croppers, including McKinsey and Authentic. A lot of people excited. Instagram.
War of Will.
War of Will, absolutely. In fact, there's a wonderful piece that Nicole Russo did about, Frances Caron and with Sid Fernando. Mm-hmm. This morning, she posted a Substack piece about Warfront in general and Claiborne. And this conversation she had with Seth Hancock with that interesting concept of a price for stallion covers, one price for commercial breeders, one for home breeders. And it's going to provocative, got an interesting reception. People were intrigued. But she talked extensively about, the Warfront Sons and War of Will. There's eight of them here. Vekoma, Volatile as well, 23 and 20 respectively. I saw a bunch of 1,000 words. There's only 14, but I think I must have seen like six of them walking around yesterday. It was very just as it happens. And then some of the other interesting under the radar types. Caracaro. Mm-hmm. I'm very intrigued. Complexity's got 24.
Yeah, it's a good group of the incoming sires, but the last, two rounds, with Justifies and those types, the last couple years of retiring stallions have been certainly very productive and are off to great starts. And then the older stallions that are fully established to certainly, they're well represented here, and they got to show their stuff the last few days on the racetrack.
The overall market conditions, Tom. There's constant pressure to doesn't let up, and one watchword continues to be, people will pay for a good horse. That just doesn't go away.
No, that's true, but I do think there may be some, the one thing we've been spoiled the last few years, the post-pandemic years. And then before the pandemic, things have just been rolling along and going very well. The purses are still increasing, and they're substantial at all segments of the market. So you don't have to run at you don't have to run in New York or Oakland or wherever there's $100,000 maiden races in Kentucky, and there's races in Miami. The maiden races are $75,000, and Tampa Bay Downs, they're $53,000. Colonial had very good purses this year. So I think that's going to drive it. There are things happening in the world that I'm not smart enough to predict how that's going to impact how things are with the interest rates changing and some other things in the financial markets. But, right now I'm positive. I have a positive outlook on it. I just think, at some point we can't expect, double-digit increases. If we can maintain a level from last year, which were record-breaking, we'll be very happy with that. And, at the end of the day, it's what they do on the racetrack. And, we need horses like Hades to go out and run and win. We need Wyda Barrio, who is a relatively inexpensive horse, wins the Breeders' Cup. He didn't run well over in Saudi, but he certainly doesn't have any excuses to make at this point. So, it's been very good. And the 3-year-old crop we have that we were fortunate enough to sell last year is very good on the filly side and on the colt side. And so, it's an exciting time of year, and this is time for the owners and trainers to kind of reload.
Are you feeling or seeing interest, wider interest, new? We're always asking about new players and new people, coming to the game. It's the one area. The one area that we cannot relent is new horse players and new owners. Nothing else is to drive the business forward and to grow. We need both, and a lot of the other problems will take care of themselves.
Yeah, so I think we've had, domestically we have a very good buying bench here. I think where we've seen expansion is in the Japanese market, who have been steadily, increasing their presence here, and we have a good contingent of Japanese buyers here on the grounds. The Saudi and that area, we've seen a lot more interest. And then, we've even had buyers from Australia and places like that are spreading their wings and kind of participating in different parts of the market. And I think the fact that these horses are performing internationally, doing very well in different parts of the world, that's, we can sit here and say how good these horses are, but until they go out and do it, and, that's advertising you can't buy. And, when you scan down and you see a $2 million Muth win, and then you see a $40,000 Wyda Barrio win, it says, oh, this this, I don't have to be the $2 million buyer. Now, we want them all to win.
Sure.
But, you know, it gives, and that's the nature of the business. That's why it works, because, the most expensive horse doesn't always win the race. And, they sort themselves out on the racetrack. And I think that's the beauty of the game and gives everybody a shot. And I think with the purse structure where it is in all these places, gives everybody a chance. But back to your question, I think the international attendance here gets better and better, and with the depth of the catalog, there will be something for them wherever they might want to participate.
I got to ask two hard questions that I knew coming in. One was already filed away. The second one emerged at the end of the week. We'll do that one first. Mike Rapoli, who is sounding off on a variety of topics, talked about a boycott, as it were, or just not participating in the 2-year-old sales. How do you respond to that, Tom? And you do have the benefit. I just had Billy Koch earlier. The benefit of the synthetic track, which is much kinder, certainly to these horses that are being essentially trained for a big performance as a showcase. But what's your response to Rapoli's thoughts?
Well, I think if anybody knows what's happening at the racetrack, he does, because he's there all the time. And all he has to do is look in the winner's circle and see where these horses come from. So, look, he's been a very good customer of ours, been good for the business. I think, and he's got, he doesn't have maybe the information that he needs to have that we need to provide him. And, with Patrick Cummings working for him, he's certainly a data guy. And prior to any of this, we as a company, because we're constantly facing that sort of misperception of what happens here and the success of the horses come here, it's easy for us to pinpoint the White of Barrios and that, but it's not an isolated instance. These horses can run, and I've got in front of me the statistics that we've compiled for the last 10 years. The horses that their last stop was a 2-year-old sale. So of all of those horses, if in fact the 2-year-old process was a negative process, the statistics should go south. The statistics go north. So the most highest number of starters is the 2-year-old category. Almost 80% starters. It's higher than yearlings, weanlings, horses that are homebreds. The average starts per starter is higher. Granted, it's only one start. It's 16 versus 15, but it's higher. It's not lower. I think the important part here, because there are yearlings that go through a 2-year-old sale, there are weanlings that go through a 2-year-old sale, but at the end of the day, if it's a negative effect on the horse's performance and their career, it would show in these stats that are not isolated. The information was provided by Equine Line. We didn't pull them out of the sky, and the average earnings per starter is higher. The percentage of black type winners is almost 5%, 3.7% for those that made their last stop at a yearling sale, and 2% for homebreds. Graded stakes winners, they're higher. So across the board, we didn't pluck the good numbers out. We just plucked the ones that might be most common for people to interpret. So I think really some of it is a knee-jerk reaction. People can react and buy or not buy. It's certainly their privilege and their right, whether they want to participate in buying horses at any level. But I think what's important is that this information gets out, and I think it's important that people understand that, the 2-year-old process is you're getting extremely talented people preparing these horses for the racetrack. Ocala Stud prepared the last two 2-year-old champions for Rapoli Stables. So it's not like it's the first time that, these people are doing it. And then let's back everything out of it. Let's take the whole thing out of it. And what incentive does a two-year-old seller have to not do the right thing by the horse? They have a tremendous investment in these horses. They have to care for their horses. They have to get them to this point in good fashion. Otherwise, John's not going to buy them. And then at the end of the day, if John is unsuccessful with his purchases, he's going to maybe regroup and say, hey, this isn't working for me. But even in Mike's comments, he said, look, I bought good two-year-olds. I bought Stock Charge and Maria.
Yeah, he's had a list of them.
He's had a lot of success here. You know, so, you know, it's unfortunate that's the you know, the reaction he's had. But, you know, I'd love to sit down with him or his team and kind of lay out some of this stuff. And you know, he's been very successful in this business. But at the end of the day, I think the numbers speak for themselves.
And Steve, one other thing that I wanted to jump in on, Tom did a very good job of explaining the stats. And, you know, what immediately came to mind is if you get better horses out of these sales, out of the OPS sales, they're stake winners, they're black type earners, theoretically those horses retire sooner. So the fact that there's a higher percentage of stake winners, higher percentage of black type earners, and that they run more races shows you the stability and the sturdiness of the horses that come out of these two-year-old sales. I know, you know, Rapoli came out and said, I'm not going to buy two-year-olds even though I've had all these successes. But then like 12 hours later, he kind of backtracked a little bit and said, you know what, my team's down there. So maybe I'm going to try to buy something of the galloping horses. And I think that the gallop out horses is going to be very interesting for us as at OBS to see just how this experiment is going to work. I think after looking at a lot of the horses in the Lothenbach dispersal that, you know, you're going to see two or three of them in the top 10 horses that are being sold, and they gallop. So I think it's going to get rid of this mantra of the horses that go sub 10 in order for it to be an expensive horse.
Well, and it's not as if the gallop concept has not been tried and floated. Frank Stronach brought everybody to Adina North to, you know, for that same exact concept. Kip Elser and the client that you know, he cultivated that wanted to do the same thing.
And in Europe. And in Europe, they do gallop up sales.
Well, and this, of course, and for those that are wondering, you know, these Lothenbach two-year-olds, they basically only knew in the last, 2 months that there was no way to get them that prepared, you know, to have an actual breeze. It was short notice, essentially. And so, you know, the varying levels of fitness that, you know, as they were in the training process.
Yeah, and I think those horses, you know, dispersals, you know, always get a little bit more interest in the fact that, you know, that people feel that they've got a shot to buy their horses and not take a little bit out of the equation as you know, who they're bidding against and what the reserve may or may not be. And I think there's some of that as well. And the Lothenbach, you know, over time has developed a very nice breeding program, and there's some quality horses in here. So I think, you know, that'll help, certainly help them sell. And at the end of the shank, if they look good and they moved good on the track, I think that certainly will be to their benefit.
Tom, the second difficult question cropped up over the last 90 days. The incident involving Jeff Engelhart with the horse of his, the two-year-old that he bought in June, that ended up, being cited for clenbuterol and was able through hair testing to trace it back to a horse that was prepared for the sale. What should people know about that? And, you know, there is the capability of doing that kind of testing, you know, before anybody, you know, buys a horse. What should we know? And I saw your quotes at the time when Engelhart floated that, not just floated, he basically proved what had transpired. What should people know? And when they, you know, if they're concerned about that topic, how should they proceed?
I think we have the sales companies in general, and OBS specifically, has a very broad, restrictive medication policy, including clenbuterol. And we were the first, the sales companies were the first on board before the racetracks to put a restriction on the use of clenbuterol. Now, there's questions to this, to the science of the hair samples, and I'm not a scientist or any of those things in terms of the ability to specify exactly when that horse was administered clenbuterol. So as a company, we look at how we can adjust our policies to make it fair for all, and we continue to do that. You know, we were on board early with the bisphosphonates and on board early with the anabolics, and we're, you know, currently in discussions with the other sales companies is what else can we do and what other things can do. And we are, you know, also at the same time, you know, we have to be cognizant of the fact that we need us to be able to scientifically, you know, pinpoint the administration of things like that. And I think at the end of the day, I don't think anything was absolutely proven that the horse was administered clenbuterol here. I think the fact was that the horse in question became a covered horse in August when he first worked, and that prior to August, he's not a covered horse, and that HISA didn't have any enforcement rights prior to August. So all they had to come up with is some information that made them feel that they didn't have a solid enough proof that this horse was treated within the 3-month period.
Right.
You know, and the other horse that Engelhardt bought from the sale, you know, turned out ran third in the maiden special at Saratoga, ran third in a stake at Finger Lakes. And so it's not like it was a bad, you know, these were bad horses or mistreated. So I think there was a finding that might have been insignificant in the long run, but obviously it was one in which, you know, certainly got a lot of publicity and that we don't take lightly. And we will, you know, certainly go back to the drawing board to make sure that we can get you know, full confidence from both sides, for the buyers and the sellers.
Well, and you mentioned Keeneland and Phasig, and the big three, and I am curious. I mean, if there is going to be at some point, if a HISA sales initiative, or they said Lisa Lazarus said in reference to this topic and the incident with Engelhardt, that they're not in a position to police the sales, but I think there is a certain percentage of the industry of stakeholders that this is a topic goes back to Jess Jackson and the Sales Integrity Task Force, and some of the changes that occurred, now it's 20 years ago.
Yeah, so I think what's important, more than whether or not HISA is the driver of this, I think what's important is that the sales companies work together. And as we've had, again, like the bisphosphonates and the anabolics and the clenbuterol, continue to, everybody get on the same page and put in policies that make sense for the buyers, make sense for the sellers, and that effort has been ongoing. And, we're currently discussing the things that we can do moving forward. And with or without HISA, I think those conversations take place anyway. We're very cognizant of issues in the industry. And, there are things that we jump in early, and then there are things that we have to react to. And that's something that we need to do, and we need to continue to do. And I think, the companies, OBS, Keeneland, and Phasic Tipton, all have that same goal in mind. We want a happy customer. We want John to buy his horse, raise his hand with full confidence, and walk out the door and say, hey, I got a chance. And, he's not going to buy fast ones all the time. Maybe if he specifically only buys two-year-olds at OBS, he might have a better shot, statistically proven. But we do want him, at the end of the day, joking aside, we do want all buyers to come in here, raise their hand with confidence, knowing that they're buying a horse, and let things happen on the racetrack as they sort themselves out at the races.
And Steve, you mentioned before, you asked me, why are you here? What made you decide to come to the March sale in particular? And Tommy's being very modest and being very humble. The things that OBS especially are trying to do to make buyers like me feel comfortable and safe and confident in buying horses goes on behind the scenes all the time. And, he mentioned about being on the forefront of testing. But also as a buyer, I love the fact that when I sign the ticket, I have the opportunity, if I want to test the horse for additional blood sample.
Right.
And that gives me, even if I don't do it, The consigners all know that it's there, that I have the opportunity as a buyer to check the box. So they're not going to do things that are going to try to, you know, screw up their sale on that point. And, you know, I'm on the shareholders board now, and I'm very, very happy to be able to report that when we have those meetings, they listen to what a buyer and end user has to say, and not just listen, but they act on it. And I can't necessarily say that, you know, true or false about the other sales companies, because I'm not behind those closed doors. But why I'm here? I'm here to buy horses from OBS because I have confidence in buying horses at OBS.
You know, and then the other thing, in addition to the testing that the buyers request, you know, we test a lot of horses, 15% or so of the horses as they're coming off the track. So that's unique to the two-year-old sale process, that it's not a horse that anyone requested to test. And I think that, you know, puts another layer of protection and integrity to the system. And I think that's something that, you know, we've been doing for a long time. So I think, you know, at the end of the day, we do have to react, and we do have to keep doing things better. But, you know, as things go, I'm proud of our product.
No, and that's what everybody, you know, at every level, essentially. I mean, because I was going to include, you know, as part of the overall topic, leadership qualities and confidence in the directions. In fact, Rapoli visited with me several Fridays ago, and you know, he asked me, you know, do we have leadership? And I actually think that there's leadership and strong leadership in the individual categories. I mean, if you parse out, you know, the different parts of the game, you know, people that are participating, you know, look to certain, and you know, to certain people that they respect and that they trust and that they want, you know, to set the tone and you know, to essentially, you know, act responsibly, act, as I say, act as good stewards. And it, I mean, that I've said repeatedly that if everybody is taking care of their own entities and acting responsibly, it solves, who knows, 80% of the issues that people think are holding us back, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, the market reacts negatively and positively to what we do or don't do.
John, for you and for the buying team, what I'm not everybody wants to answer these questions, but who are you excited about that these first set of stallions, particularly, that you're catching your eye?
Well, I can tell you that War of Will, and again, I have to preface this by saying that we are shareholders, but the War of Wills I have seen, you know, go through the yearling sales, and now I'm pleasantly surprised at just how well they're doing at the two-year-old sales, because when you think of War of Will, you don't think of, oh, he's going to be a juvenile, you know, stallion, but they really look like they're the they have the confirmation, they have the want to, and they love a variety of different tracks. So that's what I'm most excited about. But I'm also very excited about the, you know, it's not a stallion, but I'm very excited about the Lothenbach dispersal here. You know, I think that there's some really nice horses that you know, that are coming out of it. And you know, Steve and Tommy, you guys know better than I do, but it seems like whenever somebody disperses, there's always a couple of really top horses that come out of that program where if they just could have kept the program going for like another year, they would have been rewarded.
Yeah, and it's, you know, the other thing, it's a little bit of untapped talent because, you know, they haven't been able to show themselves on the racetrack to the extent of the others, and you know, you get a little bit of a horse that's maybe slightly behind the training curve, but certainly with plenty of blue sky in front of you, and you know, get a chance to buy into a program that's been successful over the years.
Well, the action.
No dogs allowed at OBS.
There's always the doggies are in every direction, right. And. Where there's horse sales, there's dogs, without a doubt. Well, John,
I thought I was coming on to talk to you about Patriot League Basketball Championship. You know, our alma maters are playing each other.
I do, and I understand. And I'm not calling them the Mountain Hawks, which is just insulting. The Engineers were down 21 from what I understand.
They were down 21 points. I actually watched both semifinal games yesterday.
Nice.
Because you guys were down for a long period of time also.
They did not play well at Colgate last night, yesterday afternoon. But they pulled it together.
Yep, they did. And
so
Lehigh's,
while you're both in Florida, you can sign up to OcalaBets.com.
Look at you.
And wager on the game right while you're here. And when you go back to whatever state you live in, it still applies.
Well, we can't bet because we can't bet New York, the college kids. But
we'll take a side bet. We'll take a side bet. I'll sign up for my account, and then we can set up a side bet based on the Patriot League Championship run it through Ocala Bets.
Wednesday, Lehigh visits Hamilton and the Lehigh-Colgate Patriot League Final. The last Patriot League Final I went to, Tina and I got COVID. March.
Did they win or lose?
They got beat by
that
BU.
That makes it worse.
It made it way worse. And as we were driving, Tina said to me, are you sure we should be doing this? COVID had literally been in the country 8 minutes. We both end up with it. And actually, we got it out of the way, which cleared the deck for the rest of, you know.
And I think that was the only year in the past six that you guys haven't gone to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah. Well, there was no way.
That's true.
The thing was scuttled.
Right. So they knew. They knew that that wasn't the year to be on top anyway.
That was the last conference championship game that was played in the country.
That's right.
As it happens.
That's right. Yeah.
And they shut down. That was on a Wednesday, and they shut everything down on Thursday.
You got a prediction?
I mean, listen, actually Lehigh played this. I saw both of those games, and I think we beat you by three both times.
Right. They were close.
Yeah. And so obviously they'll play as tough. I imagine, I mean, Colgate very tough at Cotterill. I mean, they're very tough at home, and it's a little bandbox.
Yeah, I think you guys are 8.5 points favorites right now.
Yeah, I bet you it ends up. I'll take Lehigh in the points.
Oh, okay.
Probably sounds like the smart. Where'd you go to school?
Rutgers, my
first
year,
and then
University of Arizona.
That's what I thought.
Both decent basketball programs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Arizona's very good this year.
Right.
I watched in Arizona.
Did you notice
I will date myself and say, you know, Steve Kerr was playing at the U of A at the time, and Sean Elliott.
Wow. Well,
unfortunately, when I start thinking back, you know, and in horse terms, I'm in the fourth dam a lot.
We all are. We all are, for that matter.
And you were. Is that Lute Olson territory?
Lute Olson, Midnight Lute.
Midnight Lute.
That's right.
And speaking of which, another prominent Arizona alum just walked in. Baffert. Probably check in here in the next couple of days.
Steve, I got to go look at horses.
I was going to say, okay. And I just sent a missive to Cassie, who, because last week we begged off to get him to have him do it here. So if he gets a couple of minutes, you know.
You got it.
Now and noon.
I will bring him up.
And plug for... For Real Talk.
Real Talk, our weekly podcast. We are now post Tinky. Tinky has revealed himself, so now we have to go back to our regularly scheduled programs, which is weekly, and that's wherever you can get our podcast, Real Talk, at anywhere where they're streaming.
Well, and the strangest thing about that, and I had actually two months ago when there was this first hubbub, and I was like, What are they carrying on here? I said, I think everybody knows Tony for years. And I said Tony.
Right.
And a couple of people picked up on it as it happens. I didn't think it was a big revelatory scenario that Tony Kopitz. I mean, he's been posting for 20 years on the internet.
Yep.
And what's funny is he's been out of the country so long that I think... You know, that was as I watched that whole thing unfold. Sid Fernando and I kind of laughed because we said, "Well, when everybody clamoring, well, who is this? When they're going to find out? Most people were going to be
who is that?
Who's Tony Kopitz?" And because I mean, you got to be around a while I first met Tony at Belmont, mostly, and he would always come on the show Belmont Week,
right,
leading up to the Belmont Stakes. and we'd have great conversations. I mean, Tony's got this extensive background, and it's touched on so many areas of the business. It was very funny. So I watched the whole thing kind of with kind of amused by the whole.
And we were throwing out trial balloons, you know, like just, oh, it's Steve Beck. You know, we were like really joking around saying it was different people in the industry.
Who it might have been?
Just to keep it going.
Well,
but Tony was great.
Well, so there were some really stupid suggestions. I mean, it's Barry Irwin.
Right.
No, he and Barry have sparred for years on Pollock and
right.
a Blood Horse. Somebody else. Somebody said, "Is it Sid?"
Right.
No.
But it was great. We really enjoyed it, and he's going to be a part of the show going forward on a regular basis. Not every show, but he's going to be on a regular basis because he's got so much knowledge.
Oh, he's got a. I mean, there's a lot to be gleaned. We'd always end up having like an hour long visit because
right.
you know things would. He's one of these guys that if something comes up, he can just riff on any topic because he's done a little bit of everything.
Yep.
And you know, from the blood. When I met him, he was always with Chris, with Clement, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But then he left. Then he went to Portugal, right?
Portugal.
That's
yeah.
what I thought.
Yep.
And I haven't. Has he come back at all? Does he come?
I don't think he has. I haven't gotten that
no, huh?
far into in the conversation with him because mostly we were just talking about, you know, trying to recognize and help the industry continue to grow and develop. But he's just been a wealth of knowledge, and I've really
sure.
enjoyed speaking to him. And he can talk about things that happened, you know, 30, 40 years ago that were predated my interest in the industry. And you know, history has a tendency to repeat itself.
Did you know him from?
Didn't know him from Adam. I could have bumped into him.
Oh, that's funny.
Not known that he was Tinky.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, it's those of us that have known him and
right.
knew for you know we're sort yeah. of watching from afar.
Yeah.
And,
he said he knew Tommy when Tommy's hair wasn't gray. I can't imagine that was
a long
case.
Time ago.
Too funny, John. I appreciate it, and we will we'll see you here in the next couple of days. Send your father get wells. All
thank
right?
you. I appreciate it. I know he always enjoys it as well. Thanks, Steve.
Let me get a picture of the two of you together for the listing because you had a terrific visit. And there we go. Let me go this side because the lighting. All right.
All right, good.
You're in business.
All right, thanks.
Thank you very much.
John Green. And I, you know, I want you to do one thing too, Tommy. Talk about, you mentioned OBS bets, and you remodeled the building. I think last year you were still in the process, right? And you put a lot into the. I haven't gone over to see it yet, but.
For anybody that's been.
There we go. Try it again.
For anybody that has been here for a while, have been over to the grandstand watching the Breeze show or participating in the InterTrack wagering portion of the business, we have had probably a 2-year project to. Renovate that facility, and first we started on the second floor. We completed the first floor. We added a card room to the first floor, so we have a card room on one side. We have InterTrack wagering on the other side. It's fully built out, and our hours are now extended. We weren't open on Mondays or Tuesdays because of the limited number of racetracks. Now we're open 7 days a week from 10 in the morning to, believe it or not, 4 in the morning.
Wow.
And The poker room and the card room has been very well received. We did a soft opening back in November, a full opening in December, and then we've been moving right along. So very happy with where we are right now. It was a challenge getting it all staffed. You know, the dealers aren't a dime a dozen on the streets. We're not in Las Vegas, and dealers, you know, certainly have a specific talent that you need to have, and you know, all the regulations that are in place to put it on. But I think walking into the room, you'd be impressed of the facility, and it's really you know, proud of something proud that we've done, and a kind of a next step. The one side of the room, we have a 16-foot by 10-foot TV that, you know, we watch the Derby on, watch Super Bowl on,
nice.
Any big events, and that TV is able to be, you know, cut up into multiple screens
sure.
for most of the time, and then on the big events we'll open it up as 16 by 10.
Well,
so we have, you know, we have the poker and we have the card room and we have the InterTrack wagering and a nice new facility, so hopefully when people here they have something else to do, but we do not want to distract them from their main purpose of buying horses.
No. And for the locals, right? It's certainly
a place. It's a place for entertainment and have some fun. And I think it's been very well received so far.
Excellent. It looks gorgeous. I'll get in there one of these morning afternoons. Is there an OBS sales OBSBets.com that
it's OcalaBets.com.
OcalaBets.com.
OcalaBets.com with a capital O, capital B, and capital S. OBS.
I saw that. It's cute. It's very
so,
cute.
So, yeah, so you don't need to do all those capitals when you're getting on our website. It's OcalaBets.com, and it gives actually a way to sign up for the sports betting as well and the information on the poker room and the InterTrack wagering.
Tom Ventura, everybody. Tommy, as always, I thank you. We'll probably talk to Wojo tomorrow as well and just be grabbing the horsemen as and prospective buyers as they come through. It's always,
well, we're glad you're here. We appreciate you coming and doing something live from here on
and to be part
of the Steve Bick tour, and we're proud to be part of that, and we are at least giving you the weather you expect in March.
Well, it's just amazing how it's perfect between Fountain and Tampa and this, and then we'll head to Vegas. I mean, it's just a perfect calendar that unfolds. I love coming here, and what amazes me is in the whatever it is 7-8 years I've been coming, what has happened in this town. I mean, it is. You just can't believe it. I mean, each year as I drive in, depending on which way I come, the borders of I don't want to call it urban sprawl, but I mean essentially
incredible amount of growth.
We still have that
horsey feel. There's still a big horse community, and I think that's part of the attraction. But there's certainly a lot of just very close to here, there's some new apartment buildings going up, a whole new, I don't know if I would call it a subdivision because it's bigger than that. The Calisa is an on-top-of-the-world development, which is a retirement facility, age-restricted, on-top-of-the-world is and has been here for a long time. Calisa is a newer development of theirs that's family-oriented. They have a giant aquatic center that they have there where they have, regional competitions, charter school right on site, it's a lot of things happening. And I think it's smart growth. We have to be a little careful that we don't get overcome with too much.
Well, I did not drive through the World Equestrian Center, but that continues to just burgeon and right. The second hotel and it's out of, just
yeah, the second hotel, I don't think it's on the verge of being open. We were hoping it would be open for this sale, and I'm sure they were as well. But, yeah, that second hotel should be open, by the April sale.
Very good. All right. And then they continue to develop. I guess they've got the cross-country course that was being worked on, and I'll drive through it. The next day or so.
Quite a complex.
It's unbelievable. He passed away though, right? Roberts, he did. The patriarch of the shipping of the trucking firm.
Yeah, R&L. They're everywhere. They actually deliver our catalogs.
Is that right? That's
yeah.
funny.
Unknowingly, that I was going through some of the things. I said, oh, because we get it from the company in Ohio actually produces
our
catalogs.
And the
bulk shipping of that, the big bulk shipping, has been coming for years under R&L carriers, and I've never paid attention to that minute of a detail. And I'm looking through there and said, "Oh, because it doesn't come directly from R&L; it comes as part of the package from the shipper in Ohio." And I just kind of giggled to myself after I said,
after all these years,
I said, "It's right around the corner."
Yeah, I'm going to say 6 months ago or so, 6 or 8 months ago, I saw that he had passed. When I drive to Louisville next month, come right down 71, and you go right past there. They've got on both sides of the highway. They've got their headquarters. I mean, they're big,
massive,
and I guess it's because his daughter got involved in equestrian
Yeah, I don't know the backstory. They have a big farm here, you know, that they have here in Ocala, and they are have been established here. Obviously, the World Equestrian Center has taken things to a new level, and they have the golf course as well right next door. So, you know, they're certainly big part of the community.
I saw the condos were being built, or the townhomes, or whatever, on one side. So that, I mean, you've got people that are coming to retire down here. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is.
Well, people that believed and heard the siren call of equine life in and around Ocala, and then of course, I mean, all the biggest farm owners, Mrs. Weber, and Ocala and Stud and Bridalwood, and I mean, I know there's some people have sold off some parcels and
yeah, I don't know, you know, some of the, like the old Frank's farm is a farm that, you know, that farm is not very close to this specific area. It's, you know, within 10-15 miles, but, you know, that area is not currently an active farm property.
Well, I will drive later, probably later this afternoon as the day winds down. Actually, today we're free, right? It's just, today's just, you know, viewings. You happy with the traffic?
I think so. I think we have a good contingent here of buyers, and I think they'll be trickling in like you've seen come through, because, you know, they've done their homework watching the videos, and now they're going to come look at the horse flesh and see what they look like, and hopefully tomorrow we kick it off and have a market similar to last year.
Tommy Ventura, Jimmy, we haven't seen Jimmy. What's he, where's?
Yeah, he's kind of, he thought about coming down for this sale. He might come down for the April sale. Right now, he's staying busy doing his real estate thing.
Well, I heard from him, now it's probably a month ago he sent me a note, so.
Very good. Well, thank you again, Steve. We always appreciate it.
Not at all. Tom Ventura, everybody. And Ocala Breeder Sales Company, the two-year-old in training sale season starts in the morning. Thank you. Gonna get a visit in with Valerie Buck, who I owe a visit. And, of course, act naturally. And look at that. Look at that. Look at that Frenchie. Right? She's got, thank you. Appreciate it. Tom Ventura, everybody. And here, grab that.
Good morning, neighbor.
How are you?
Good. It's good to see you here.
It's unbelievable. I see you I see you here every year now, actually. So I should yeah, give me that next. Thank you. Those stats that Tommy quoted about kind of fighting the reputation that you know, that the two-year-old in training sales are a problem. So I'll circulate that out to everybody. What's going on? Give us an update. I owed you a visit last summer, and I my fault.
It's all good. We celebrated our 10-year anniversary last year, and we had a great season. We connected with the Adirondack peer-to-peer group. It's a veterans mentor group up in they're up in north of us in Washington, Warren County in New York. And we had quite a few veterans come through, male and female combat veterans.
Nice.
And had some really amazing, but if we sit down and you can tell the people, they come in and are guarded and insecure and nervous. And by lunchtime, everyone's socializing and happy and relaxed, and the horses have just been phenomenal in their participation in our programs with the veterans. So we're gearing up for another season coming up. The vets are back early May and are at our farm in Cambridge, New York, and we're also connecting with Wellspring, which is a domestic violence center in Saratoga. So we're going to be working with the victims of domestic violence as well.
Wellspring, I think who's the individual that
Maggie Frank?
Because I think I follow her, and I didn't realize that was that there was a cause per se involved. first of all, we should include. I mean, a lot of you know Valerie for years, and big time exercise rider for how long? How long did you?
Close to 30 years.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And was very fortunate to get hooked up early on with Wayne Lucas and rode Proud Citizen and a lot of champions over there at his barn, and went on to ride for Billy Mott, another fantastic group of champions. Richard Mandela out in California, when we won 4 Breeders' Cup races in one day, and finished my career with Todd Pletcher riding some really amazing horses in his stable.
Harlem Rocker.
Harlem Rocker, my boy, yeah. I rode him, and he was one of my favorites at the barn, and he was retired from racing and stood a season as a stallion at McMahon's in Saratoga. And he disappeared, so I went looking for him and found him, and they retired him from breeding, and he was a pensioned stallion at 10 years old, so they gelded him, and I drove to Kentucky and picked him up. He was my 50th birthday present to myself, and he spent 6 years with us working in our programs and YMCA camp, working with veterans and teenage kids, helping people heal, and I unfortunately lost him to a cancerous mass in his foot, and it was putting him down was one of the hardest days of my life, but I also know that I gave him 6 of the best years of his, so it was a win for everybody, and the Stronach team was just wonderful and supporting us through all of it. So anyway, so this spring we're getting started with the veterans programs and the victims of domestic violence up in Saratoga, and we're starting a big campaign to raise some funds to support this. We don't charge any of the participants to participate in our programs, so it all comes through donations, and we're lucky enough to be supported through the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance, the Thoroughbred Charities of America, Saratoga-based Death Wish Coffee Company supports us, as well as the New York Thoroughbred Breeders Fund Foundation. Tracy Egan is part of that, and they've been supporting us over the past few years. So, you know, it's good. Personal donations have really been down through the economy, I guess. But, you know, we get some family foundation money through the grant money that we apply for, but we do need support in helping these programs, because taking care of the horses, like everything in the world, everything's gone up. Hay's gone up, feed's gone up, vet bills have gone up, and so we need support. So we like to ask people if they believe in what we're doing, and they can visit our website. The organization is called Act Naturally, and they can visit our website and learn more about us and make a donation if they choose to.
ACT is spelled with 2 T's, A-C-T-T, naturally.org, and you've heard Valerie with me for years. Explain the ACT Naturally and the, you know, the fascinating approach that you adopted. You were trained for a little bit of a different approach to, you know, second careers and essentially, you know, taking the racetrack out of racehorses and conditioning them for all the various possible utilities, because there's no shortage of what they can do.
Correct. And the retired racehorse makeover that happens in October, November every year is a, you know, they've done a really good job at displaying the versatility of the thoroughbreds through Western riding, English, polo. You know, they're not a one-way road for them. So I was I got hurt pretty bad in 2009. I was working for Todd Pletcher and broke my neck and smashed up my shoulder. And so I was off for a winter. And I was introduced to natural horsemanship through Bob Duncan, who was the head starter at New York Racing Association for 50 years. He now works for Todd Pletcher in helping the young horses accept the starting gate. And Bob introduced me into Pirelli Natural Horsemanship, and he gave me some DVDs. We were working with a horse that was having trouble getting in the trailer, and I was really impressed with the approach that we took and how the horse accepted it. So Bob gave me some DVDs to watch, and I watched them and kind of put them aside. And after I got hurt, I was grounded, and I had a horse that I had ridden for Todd Pletcher. He was a $300,000 Hennessy horse that didn't like being a racehorse, and I ended up with him. I had asked the owners if I could have him when he was done racing, and they retired him to me. And I ended up going down to Pat Pirelli's ranch here in Ocala in 2010. My parents sent me there as a gift, and it changed everything I knew about horses. And, you know, as long as I'd been riding and the caliber of horses I'd been riding, I was getting burnt out from riding at the track every day. And this took my whole world in a different direction. I started out with Saratoga Warhorse, based in Saratoga, helping veterans there. I supplied the horses to that program for the first 3 years.